Good morning. This is TCT Daily Report for Monday, April 6, 2026. I'm reading from Boston. In Commerce and Capital this morning, a report that should trouble every American who has given serious thought to the sinews of modern warfare. The United States possesses roughly 8 weeks of rare earth supplies available for military use, according to a report published by the South China Morning Post, citing anonymous sources familiar with the matter. 8 weeks. That is the depth of the strategic reserve underpinning the most advanced military on Earth. At the very moment that military is engaged in active combat operations against Iran, the first 36 hours of the American-Israeli campaign consumed more than 3,000 precision-guided munitions and interceptors. According to an analysis published by Foreign Policy, drawing on research from the Colorado School of Mines, every Tomahawk cruise missile, every JDAM guidance kit, every interceptor fired from a destroyer at sea contains rare earth permanent magnets: neodymium, praseodymium, dysprosium, terbium, without which the guidance and propulsion systems that define American precision warfare simply do not function. China controls approximately 60% of global rare earth mining and more than 90% of the refining that converts raw ore into usable metals and magnets. Beijing imposed export controls on heavy rare earth elements last April and expanded them dramatically in October, with extraterritorial licensing requirements covering any product containing even trace amounts of Chinese origin material. The South China Morning Post reports that Washington's limited inventory is expected to dominate discussions when President Trump meets with President Xi Jinping, a meeting already delayed. Beijing, according to the Post's sources, appears less eager for a deal than Washington, a negotiating asymmetry that the mineral deficit only sharpens. The arsenal of democracy, it turns out, depends on supply chains it does not control. Turning now to the world of arts and letters, and to the skies above us, four Americans are at this hour closing the final distance to the moon. The crew of NASA's Artemis II mission, Commander Reid Wiseman, pilot Victor Glover, mission specialist Christina Cook, and Canadian Space Agency astronaut Jeremy Hansen, entered the moon's gravitational sphere of influence today, the point at which the pull of lunar gravity overtakes the pull of the Earth. Their spacecraft, the Orion capsule christened Integrity, is on a precise trajectory toward a flyby of the lunar far side later today, a passage that will carry these four human beings farther from their home planet than anyone has ever traveled. The Space Launch System rocket lifted off from Kennedy Space Center on Wednesday evening, April the 1st. By Saturday, the crew was approximately 169,000 miles from Earth. Pilot Glover reported to the ground that the Earth had become quite small and that the moon was definitely getting bigger. On flight day 4, mission specialists Cook and Hansen took turns manually piloting the spacecraft in deep space, testing thruster modes for 41 minutes to provide engineers with data about Orion's handling characteristics. On Sunday, the crew began practicing emergency suit-up procedures, testing the speed with which they could don their Orion Crew Survival System spacesuits and strap into their seats. It is the first time the new suits have been worn in the deep space environment. More than half a century after Apollo, the United States has returned human beings to the vicinity of the moon, and the Republic may take quiet pride in that achievement, even amid the turbulence of the hour. From the Agora now, and to the budget that would define the nation. President Trump's fiscal year 2027 budget, released Friday, proposes $1.5 trillion in defense spending alongside a 10% reduction in non-defense discretionary programs. The White House itself boasted that the spending level approaches the historic increases just prior to the Second World War. The base Pentagon request of $1.15 trillion marks the first time that figure has breached the trillion-dollar threshold. An additional $350 billion would be channeled through budget reconciliation to bypass a Senate filibuster.
The budget includes funds for 18 Battle Force ships, expanded munitions production to replenish stockpiles depleted by the Iran conflict, and continued investment in the Golden Dome missile defense architecture. On the domestic side, the Environmental Protection Agency faces a 52% cut. The National Science Foundation would be reduced by 55%. The Small Business Administration would lose 67% of its funding. The National Institutes of Health would absorb a $5 billion reduction. The word woke appears 34 times in the 92-page document, according to NPR. Let that figure speak for itself. The United States is at war, and this budget formalizes the posture of a wartime presidency. But the question the Republic must ask is whether a nation can indefinitely sustain strategic primacy abroad while hollowing out the institutions of knowledge and governance at home. Remaining in arts and letters, the scientific community is reckoning with what that budget would mean in practice. The proposed National Science Foundation budget of $4 billion, down from $8.8 billion, would reduce the nation's primary funder of basic research to a scale not seen in decades. The administration would eliminate all funding for the NSF division supporting social science and economics research. At an internal meeting on Friday, NSF leaders announced they would dissolve the Social, Behavioral, and Economic Sciences Directorate entirely. STEM education programs at the foundation would be cut by 86%, from $1.1 billion to $151 million. Two areas the administration favors, artificial intelligence and quantum computing, would receive nearly a quarter of the reduced total. The NIH would lose roughly $5 billion. And in a provision that has drawn particular alarm from the research community, the budget would impose a government-wide prohibition on using federal funds for academic journal subscriptions and publishing fees. The administration frames these reductions as a reorientation towards strategic priorities. Critics see the dismantling of the infrastructure that produced American scientific preeminence in the first place. And finally, the American Art Museum endured a punishing year in 2025 and emerged, according to the Art Newspaper's annual survey released Friday, battered but remarkably durable. The most dramatic losses trace to two distinct calamities. In Los Angeles, the January Palisades fire forced the Getty Villa to close for approximately 6 months, sending attendance down nearly 60%. On the opposite coast, last fall's 43-day federal government shutdown shuttered the Smithsonian Complex and the National Gallery during peak autumn visitation. The National Gallery lost more than a quarter of its audience. The National Portrait Gallery and the Smithsonian American Art Museum saw audiences reduced to close to half their pre-COVID size. The Art Newspaper attributed those Smithsonian declines not solely to the shutdown, but to broader institutional turbulence, disputes with the administration over programming, the withdrawal of artists from exhibitions, and high-level resignations. Yet privately governed institutions told a different story. The nation's largest independent museums continued their post-pandemic recovery, and in several cases reached historic highs. The lesson is familiar, but bears repeating. Public institutions require public commitment, and when that commitment wavers, the losses are measured not only in dollars, but in the democratic access to beauty, history, and meaning. That is TCT Daily Report for Monday, April 6th, 2026. The Commonwealth Times. Pro Republica Edificamus.